This is Trump Watch. I'm John Wiener, live in LA on 90.7 KPFK. Coming up later in this hour, Alan Minsky will be talking with Jim Lafferty about the new documentary film on billionaire Robert Mercer. He's the man who bailed out the Trump campaign and introduced Trump to Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway. That documentary is our featured thank you gift this hour of the KPFK Fund Drive. 818-985-5735 is the number to call and pledge and get this as our thank you gift. Well, our top Trump watcher today is John Nichols. Of course, he's national affairs correspondent for The Nation. His most recent book is People Get Ready. John, welcome to Trump Watch.
Hey, John. I'm rushing to be a part of Trump Watch.
Okay, well, it's day 28 of the Trump presidency. This, I think, has been Trump's worst week yet. We've seen his national security advisor resigned, his labor secretary nominee withdrew, and his proposed executive order on the Muslim ban was stayed by the federal courts. He had a press conference today to announce his new nominee for labor secretary, a man named Alexander Acosta. We didn't really learn much about Alexander Acosta today. Trump talked a lot more about CNN and CNN's ratings. Do I have that right?
Well, I mean, you're really not giving the guy his due. Okay. He also called on a black reporter and asked her if she could help him get together with the black caucus.
Yeah, I think even CNN called that a jaw-dropping moment.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of put things in perspective.
Yes.
The president of the United States did like a hour by hour critique of one of the cable channels and apparently forgot the name of the anchor of the 10 o'clock hour show, but basically trashed him, right? You know, like I said, that guy's really bad or it's all lies and stuff like that, right? So he's like going with one person, he's going down literally critiquing cable TV schedules. Then he calls on an African-American reporter.
I believe the only one in the room. I heard it was the only.
No, there were others.
There were others. Okay.
Packed room. But he calls on her, and she's a veteran who often gets called on at press conferences. And it's like a known person, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least to most of the White House press corps. She's been there for decades. And he, like, takes her question rather politely. And then when she brings up the Congressional Black Caucus, he says, "Hey, are you friends with them? Can you help me get together with them?"
Horrible.
It's like, you know, I mean, I don't know. He could have just stopped somebody on the street, maybe. I don't know. But it's like that was like a bizarre thing to say.
Yeah, like all you black people, all you black people know each other, right?
Yeah, well, I guess we raise it to the level of she is a reporter. So, you know, she would know the congressional.
But she might.
But that's amazing. But this was not the highlight.
What was the highlight?
I believe the highlight was telling a Jewish reporter to sit down and be quiet while Trump talked about anti-Semitism.
Oh yeah, that was pretty strong.
That was a bizarre moment because the reporter who got up and asked the question asked it stunningly politely.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was an incredibly respectful way to ask it. He said, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, I hope I get it right. You know, essentially, look, I'm not saying you're anti-Semitic or your family is or anybody else. You know, I mean, I respect your history. You know, but he really like had a bunch of gentle kind of comforting words at the start. And then he says, you know, but there's been a lot of reports of, you know, anti-Semitic incidents and, you know, around the country. And you know, since you've become president, do you want to say something about that? And Trump kind of like ripped the guy.
Yeah.
You know, and when the guy tried to, I think really tried to just clarify, Trump, you know, basically said, "Hey, I got your question. You know, sit down."
Sit down. Yeah, he said, sit down.
Bizarre.
Yeah. How hard would it be to say, "I'm against anti-Semitism and I condemn it"? That would take about.
You think that'd be a good That's a good starting point, really, almost in any conversation.
Yeah, he never said that. As I recall, though, he never said that. He said, how can you bring up this to me since I have a son-in-law and a daughter who are dot, dot, dot.
Well, and it follows on the bizarre thing that happened at the press briefing conference with Netanyahu.
Yeah.
The Israeli prime minister, where he was asked about anti-Semitism and went into a bizarre rant about the election and the electoral college and stuff.
How many electoral votes he read? The answer to the question, do you have any comment on the wave of anti-Semitic incidents since you became president? His answer was, I got more electoral votes than they thought I would.
Yeah. It was like, who are they, by the way? but anyways. So that was just weird. So, I mean, we got, like...
I got one. I have one that I thought was weirder. When they were... Okay. There were a lot of questions about the resignation of Michael Flynn, his former national security advisor, who lost his job after revelations that he'd spoken with the Russian ambassador in December, or just before Trump became president. Trump... said was many times he was asked about the Russia story, and he said, quote, the leaks are real, but the stories are fake. I hope, John Nichols, you can explain this, because I'm having trouble understanding it. The leaks are real, but the stories are fake.
Well, and of course I can't really explain it, right? You know, I mean, because it's too bizarre. The whole thing about his about the whole Flynn thing, right? Okay. As best I can sort this out, and you help me if I'm okay with it. Okay?
All right.
The guy did something. Flynn did something that a lot of people think is kind of more than inappropriate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, some people think he's sort of like trying to undermine U.S. foreign policy by promising that it would change when somebody else got in office, right?
Yes.
I mean, you can interpret it as you like, and we haven't seen the transcripts of the calls, but it's pretty serious business. But that didn't bother Trump. that wasn't the problem with Flynn. And so then Flynn gets caught out on it, right? The Justice Department's telling the White House there's a problem here. But that didn't bother Trump, because they didn't get rid of the guy, right? They didn't, like, move to... His security clearances and stuff were only taken away after he left, right? Then they find out that he lied, apparently, to the vice president of the United States and to other White House staff. But that didn't bother Trump. What bothered Trump was the leak or the leaks that revealed that all this stuff happened.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's sort of like, if I've got this right, and I'm not claiming that I do, it appears that Donald Trump is not bothered by wrongdoing or lying, but he is bothered if the people know that that happened.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, he was asked 5 times, but what about this? What about this Flynn talking to the Russians? And finally, on the 5th time, he said something like, you know, Flynn, he'd always said Flynn is a wonderful man and what's happened to him is very wrong. Well, if it's so wrong, why did you fire him? What's very, and
yeah,
then I kept saying,
so
well,
wrong. Why didn't you just keep the guy?
Why didn't you keep him? And he said, well, he was doing his job when he called the Russian ambassador, but he shouldn't have lied to Pence. That was his offense. That was the 5th time. On the 5th question, that was the answer he came up with. So it does sort of make you wonder whether that's the real... when there's a news update at this hour, the Washington Post just posted this story. In the last hour, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn denied to FBI agents in an interview last month that he had discussed U.S. sanctions against Russia with that country's ambassador to the United States before Trump took office. We've been wondering, well, what exactly did Flynn say in these phone calls? Trump denied that he, in his FBI interview, that he discussed Obama's sanctions against Russia. The Washington Post reports this contradicts the contents of intercepted communications collected by intelligence agencies, U.S. officials said. Now, my question for you, John Nichols, is lying to the FBI, is that a bad thing?
I just don't do it myself. John, you're taking this way too seriously.
Okay.
First off, you realize we're living in a country where our national security advisor is being interviewed by the FBI.
And perjuring himself.
Right off the bat.
Right. Right off the bat, we have an obstruction of justice.
Well, no, he's being interviewed. Just the fact that they have to walk in the room.
Well, that's true. That is, right.
Okay, he's a national security advisor, but we got to send the FBI to ask him some questions.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so that's cool. All right. We're doing a lot of due diligence here. And then he lies to him, right?
Yeah.
And that's neither of those are the problem. Okay? I just want you to be clear.
What is the problem?
That our national security advisor didn't know that the FBI and other people monitor what people say.
Yes. Why didn't he know?
I'm sorry. The guy is supposed to be like in charge of keeping America safe from something, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't know that the U.S. government might, intercept telephone conversations with the Russians?
It is mind-boggling.
Really?
It is mind-boggling.
Did he ever go to a movie? Did he ever go to a movie or read a novel?
Or what was that whole Snowden thing about? Didn't Snowden complain that the NSA was spying on everybody, and not just the Russians, but everybody else too? It is
Warren
amazing.
What did Warren Zevon teach us 40 years ago in the song? What did he teach us? How was I to know she was with the Russians too? Come on.
Warren Zevon.
It's a popular song.
Yeah, I think you've made an excellent point. How could the National Security Advisor not know that we're eavesdropping on the Russian ambassador's phone calls? That is the most mind-boggling thing of the whole.
It is. It's like a four-year-old lying. You almost can't get mad at him because you think, okay, this is hopeless. You don't even get that I know these things. So anyway, that's bad. But can we, John, we've gone way, we've gotten deep into this, all these important topics. And I know that we keep trying to outdo each other with the press conferences.
I'm ready. Moments,
but I'm going to put another card on the table, can I?
Please.
I got my card here. Okay. Donald Trump, in the midst of the press conference, had a little rant about his extraordinary victory in the race for president, how big he won.
Yeah,
like best victory ever kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, a reporter got up and corrected him, right? And said...
He said it was the biggest victory since Reagan.
Reagan, which, of course, is totally not true.
Yeah.
So he gets... It was quite the opposite, actually. And so then reporter gets up and corrects all of this, right? Basically points out, he didn't do as well as Obama in either of his elections. He didn't do as well as, all these other people. He runs down the whole list. And then Trump says, his great response, which I thought was probably one of the best responses ever from a president of the United States. Well, that's what I was told.
That's what I was told. Yeah.
Now, that was good. Okay, so we got that on the table. But here's my winning point. He had his electoral vote wrong.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He keeps saying 306, right?
Yeah.
But you realize that two of his people did vote for him. He got 304.
Oh, no. If you've just tuned in.
He's not even being told the wrong lie.
If you've just tuned in, this is Trump Watch on KPFK. I'm John Wiener, 90.7 in Los Angeles. And anytime you want on TrumpWatchPodcast.com, we're speaking with John Nichols of The Nation. Just to pull back here and look at the larger picture, ever since Watergate, we've been saying it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. But in this case, the case of Mike Flynn talking to the Russian ambassador in December, and that implies apparently, it seems that he and other Trump people were speaking with the Russian ambassador during the campaign. If it's true that the Trump campaign worked with the Russians to defeat Hillary, in this case, the cover-up is not really worse than the crime, is it?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, truthfully, honestly, I'm not exactly sure that it's ever the case. I just think that's something, like, pundits like to say.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think the idea was the Watergate. This is about Watergate. The Watergate crime was what Nixon called the third-rate burglary at the offices of the Democratic National Committee, which, as far as we know, Nixon himself had not personally ordered. We don't have evidence of that. But Nixon did put a massive 300-day effort into covering up this third-rate burglary. So that's why they say it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. Because in the Watergate case, I mean, it was trying to interfere with the opposition party's headquarters, breaking into the opposition party's headquarters. That's certainly an offense against democracy. But enlisting the help of the Russians, our adversaries in the world today, that's bigger.
Okay, John. I'm willing to accept your hierarchy here.
Okay.
But I'm still going to suggest to you that breaking into the office of the opposition party in an election year for purposes of messing with their campaign and all the associated things like that, I'm sorry, if our State Department was looking at another country, we would say that was a really bad thing.
I think you're right.
That was sufficient.
I think you're right.
Covering up for it was bad. I agree. But just the basic thing. And so I'll go to my point, which will not probably be made on any other show. If we actually had a sense of perspective about wrongdoing with regards to elections on a whole host of issues, voter suppression, you know, lying, the flooding of money into these things, all sorts of things that really are damaging to democracy, and actual lawlessness, George McGovern would have been president.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but we don't have that. We sort of write things off and we talk around it. And as a result, we're like, oh, the cover-up was worse than the crime. Actually, I think these crimes against democracy are really serious issues. They're always serious issues, whether done by Democrats or Republicans. And maybe this time, and we don't even know all the facts, and I think there's an awful lot of twists and turns in all this. Maybe this time we ought to just pause and say, this is bad stuff and we ought to deal with this.
Yeah.
And frankly, what I wish, but we won't get, I know this is wishful thinking. I wish that we were like countries around the world where they find an election was corrupted or badly run or even that a government took power and then it kind of went way out of sync, where the government stands down and you call a new election.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not kidding. I really that is the right repair for a situation where an election has been mangled, if indeed it has. And I'm not making final judgments. You got to have serious people make the call on this. But the right repair for an election that's been mangled, as I happen to think a lot of the 2016 election was. Also, as I think many others have been over the years, by just lawlessness, bad behavior, whatever, or an election that was too close to call, like the 2000 election.
Mm-hmm.
The right response is to have a new election.
I like it.
Why would you? Why do you have this emergency sensibility? Oh, it's more important to seat a president, anybody, than to get it right. And why? One final thing, John, as long as we're talking about how a democracy ought to work, why if somebody doesn't get 50%, don't we have a runoff election like France or like all sorts of other places? Like 2 weeks later, you take the two candidates who come out at the top level and you have a runoff. Because neither Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump got 50% of the vote. It happens Clinton got a lot closer. But why not have a runoff election? That would allow someone to take office is the choice of the majority of the American people who voted. And it seems to me that would be a good idea. Now we've gotten into the area of actually being serious about democracy.
Yeah.
I apologize. We can go back to our topic.
No, I wanted to bring up another topic. The topic that was kind of neglected in today's press conference. The Secretary of Labor nominee, Andrew Puzder, withdrew suddenly yesterday. How did that happen?
Well, you know what I like is, and I sort of enjoy the journalist, being a journalist, being a part of the journalistic community, I sort of like when we pat ourselves on the back and we say, well, things were revealed about this guy. And they were, and believe me, with this Andrew Puzder guy, there was a lot to reveal, right? When you bring Oprah into the discussion, it's always good.
Yes.
And this guy, you know, it's everything. You know, his personal life, his business practices, his crazy policies and stances on the issues. But you know what I would say? I have an argument on why he didn't get it when, say, Betsy DeVos did.
When yes.
she was, by her own testimony, totally disqualified.
Mm-hmm.
When Tom Price did, when there were stunning, you know, when there had been stunning revelations about this guy's, you know, financial practices and stuff like that, you know, or at least he's gotten through the process at this point. When Jeff Sessions, I mean, literally where you've got to shut down the reading of a letter from Coretta Scott King to get the guy through, right? I mean, they got through. So why didn't Puzder get through?
Why? This is
what
the question.
I would argue, and we don't give credit to the folks, there's a group of folks in organized labor and in the farm and food communities, which have always had a concern about Puzder for a variety of reasons, not least of which some of the restaurants he operates and how he operates them, just decided that they were going to keep on this guy no matter what was thrown their way. And it was a fascinating thing. About a week or so ago, after the DeVos nomination for Secretary of Education was approved, I wrote a piece in which I said, labor is stepping up its efforts to stop Andrew Puzder.
Yes.
And all sorts of people say to me, oh, well, that's not going to work because you can't stop any of these people. They're all going to be approved. McConnell's just going to do it. And it's there's no point to it. If we couldn't stop DeVos, we can't stop anybody. I disagree. I think the resistance is an evolving entity that is growing stronger with each day. And I think that, yes, the resistance has been beaten on some important fights, on some heartbreaking fights. But at each step, it gets better at what it does, and it figures out how to slow things down, to get more time, to open the space in which the necessary questions are asked and the revelations take hold. And so I think we have to give a substantial amount of credit to organized labor, which is always beaten on, to the farm and food community, to activists from who showed a lot of solidarity and kept on this thing. You know, there were Fight for 15 activists out in frigid weather, you know, outside senators' offices around the country saying, you know, don't let this guy become Secretary of Labor. And I actually think the time and energy and persistence that they put into this actually had an impact. And we ought to give credit where credit is due.
I appreciate that. John Nichols, we got, I don't know, three or four minutes left here. Pulling back with another big picture question, you know, Trump had promised that on the first day he was going to repeal all of Obama's executive orders and begin to erase the Obama legacy. Where do we stand at this point on Trump's agenda, bringing back manufacturing jobs, repealing and replacing Obamacare, building a wall to keep out Mexicans and Central Americans, instituting a Muslim ban, and draining the swamp? He's been in office for 4 weeks now. What has he accomplished in terms of his agenda?
Well, if you heard him talk today at the press conference, pretty darn near everything.
It's a well-oiled, fine-tuned machine, he said, something like that.
Exactly. There are countries around the world where they're used to leaders doing that, you know, but you know, where they go on like a kind of riff for a long period of time about how great they are. But the reality is that because Trump is mired in so many scandals, stumbles, problems, crises, that a press conference like that didn't get to the core discussion, really. I mean, they're so busy talking about Flynn and, you know, Russians and anti-Semitism, which is a pretty legitimate thing to bring up, and you know, all these other issues that of the moment that have arisen, that they didn't get to the core thing of, didn't what you just say, wasn't just what you just said crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't accomplished a whole bunch of stuff. His agenda is not moving forward in Congress at this point, thankfully. It appears that there is a real divide between him and a lot of Republicans on a host of issues. It also appears that his scandals and controversies and problems have actually, all this has caused Republicans in Congress to begin a slow distancing of themselves, particularly, I think, in the Senate. And so he's not, no, this isn't a particularly successful thing. And, you know, what's interesting is he claimed in his press conference today that he was doing great despite the fact that his cabinet hasn't been fully approved. And here's the interesting thing. He's got a majority in the Senate. They can approve. They have the votes to approve anybody.
Yeah.
Right? You understand, he's picked nominees that are so controversial, so scandal-plagued, that it's been possible for an opposition that does not have the votes to slow this thing down a great deal.
And let us remember. This
don't
is
blame the opposition. Blame your nominees.
Yeah, and remember, this is supposed to be the honeymoon period for all of his predecessors. The first month was smooth sailing. Give him a chance, you know. And Trump has moved nothing in Congress. Paul Ryan must be tearing his hair out every day. Like, we've waited 8 years. We've waited 8 years to have our guy in the White House, and we haven't gotten anywhere in his honeymoon period. John, I'm afraid we are out of time. It has been a real pleasure. John Nichols,
total pleasure, my friend.
Of course, national affairs correspondent of The Nation magazine. Read him at thenation.com. John, thanks for talking with us on Trump Watch.
Thanks, brothers. Good talking to you.
Hey, Trump watchers, if you missed part of this show or any of our recent shows, you can listen online anytime you want at TrumpWatchPodcast.com. Next up on KPFK, Alan Minsky will be talking with Jim Lafferty about the new documentary film on billionaire Robert Mercer, the man who bailed out the Trump campaign and introduced Trump to Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway. That documentary is our featured thank you gift this hour of the KPFK Fund Drive. The number here to get your copy is 818-985-5735. The new documentary film on Robert Mercer, Alan Minsky will be with us in just a minute on KPFK when Trump Watch continues. Welcome back. This is Trump Watch. I'm John Wiener, live in L.A. on 90.7 KPFK, streaming at kpfk.org, online anytime you want it at trumpwatchpodcast.com. Maybe you heard it's the KPFK Fund Drive. We need your help in paying the bills to keep the station on the air, free of advertising, free of corporate underwriting. Now we turn to Alan Minsky with news about a special documentary that is our thank you gift to you this hour of the KPFK Fund Drive.